Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. We've got a lot to cover today, and I'm tired. It's Friday. What an exhausting week. But I picked up some comics, back issues, and I want to go over them. I got a book. I was trying to get all of the Extreme Studios ones, and I didn't realize this one existed, but my comic shop got a bunch of number ones of Image Comics, and I pulled this one out, and this was Operation Night Strike, and I had a feeling I didn't have it, so I pulled it, and I was right. It's a 3-issue series, really cool series. I've already read this one. It has Chapel, Al Simmons, so that's Spawn, Dutch, Battlestone, and Kabat. So it has your Brigade and Bloodstrike. This is like the Team 7 of Extreme Studios with Spawn in it. So that was pretty cool. There's a comic book called DEFCON. It has a Jim Lee cover. Don't know what this is about. It's a one shot. I found Kitty Pryde, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., 3-issue series, and I picked those up. This was definitely, I could tell just by the Marvel Comics logo, a time period where I missed a lot of Marvel. I know it. So I picked those up. And then I've been trying to, as I find them, pick up Chaos Comics. I still have a lot of them, but there's a few I picked up here. It was Lady Death. I think this is the ongoing series. But it was titled Wicked Ways, the 4-issue arc. I picked up 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Wicked Ways. It even has Dementor, I think that's his name, on the cover of 4. And I don't know who's on 3. And Lady Demon is on 2. But really cool. I've always been a fan of Bad Girl comics. And let's see, what else did I get? I got a few more. Got to get these spawns out of the way because I just read them. I got a Chastity comic. And this one was interesting. It's a number one, and it's Polito writing, but Giustiniano in art. That name might sound controversial. He was an artist on a couple of books, like The Creeper, and he was popular in what was the team that Detective Chimp was on? I can't remember. Night Stalker was on it. Ragman. I can't remember the team. Blue Devil. Shadow Pact. God, man, I'm getting old. Well, Giustiniano was. This is like the 10th year since I think he served a 10-year sentence in prison for child molestation. But if it wasn't for that, he was an up-and-coming artist, in terms of art. But I didn't even know he did that. This is Lady Demon. And I don't, sometimes it's not good to know your heroes, like just not know them, just so you can enjoy the material without letting it bias you. Not know their politics, not know how they feel on Twitter. Just take a comic book and try to observe it. I did let some of it affect me well back, but now I just try to consume a comic book. Like, if I want to watch Lethal Weapon because I liked it, I don't let it change my opinion of Lethal Weapon just because Mel Gibson went wacko. Some people change their stuff and they say, oh, I'm going to ban this, I'm not going to do it. But then I'd be banning anything. And then I would, like, stop supporting Bleedo because he wrote this. So, yeah, it's a choice you make. I choose to just get the comic books. There's a Lady Death Heartbreaker I got. I've been this is the first appearance of Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, but it's only a second print. So I took it though. I wanted it. There's a Lady Death by Stephen Hughes. There's a one-shot special called Misery by Brandon Peterson and Bat. That's Image Comics. And then I found a comic called Killraiser, number one. Madame Frankenstein, number one and two. I didn't pick that up back in the day. And another Lady Death. What is this? Dragon Wars, number one. Another Chastity, number one. This one might be the same issue, just a different variant. And then there's another Chastity here that I picked up. And a Lady Death Chromium cover, which I might have this one already by Steve Hughes, but I picked it up anyway. So that tells you what I got recently. And then I got an Aaron Meyer shipment, which had a bunch of good Silver Age goodness. I'll just go through these real quick. Captain Marvel number 25. Godzilla, King of the Monsters from Marvel Comics number 17. I don't have much Godzilla. I'm getting close on a full run of Captain Marvel. Godzilla, I only have like three issues. But anytime I get an affordable one, I go for it. When I was auditing my Power Man, I realized I somehow missed, or I have it. I think this is the case, but I forgot to put it in the database. Power Man and Iron Fist number 50. So I got another one if I already had it, but I have all the Power Man comics. At least I claimed I did, and I found out in the database I was missing this particular issue, which kind of sucked. But I picked it up. I picked up Thor 166. This is the second appearance of him, Warlock. So that was kind of an expensive book, but I went for it. And there's one really expensive book that I kept on putting out, and I'll get to that eventually. We're working on a full run of the Iron Man Captain America Tales of Suspense. I have quite a bit of them. Got that. Also doing Tales to Astonish. This Tales of Suspense was 87. Tales to Astonish number 66. The first appearance of Madame Macabre. Who is the unexpected guest villain who suddenly appears on page 4? Plus the power of Dr. Banner. And then I got 85 Tales to Astonish. I am missing a lot of Tales to Astonish. So whenever I get an opportunity to pick those up, here's the main book that I really wanted. This is Adventure into Fear. If you look at the indices, it's just called Fear. Starring the Man-Thing, number 19, which is the first appearance of Howard the Duck. I've been looking at this one for a long time because I already have a full run of Howard the Duck. Not Howard the Duck magazine, but Howard the Duck. And all the minis that came after it. I don't know why I ordered this one because I already had a full run of Marvel Premiere, but somehow I must have just clicked claim on his thing. That's the only thing I could think of, which got me Doctor Strange, Marvel Premiere, number 12. I got Doctor Strange 173. This is the 12th Center. Doctor Strange 179 with Spider-Man on the cover. This is 12th Center. And then 180, which has a photo cover of Eternity. The Eternity's drawn, and so is Doctor Strange, where he had the face covering, but the background is an actual photo of, I think, New York City. And that sums up my back issues today. I actually picked up a bunch of just obscure shit. I actually had time to chill. I was exhausted. I got out of work fairly early, but I put in some long days. I was on overtime. So exhausting this week that I've been falling asleep around 8:30. That's how tired I've been. And then I get up and my mind races and Oh, it's been a rough week. I just feel like exhausted. I'm ready to retire. I only got like a couple more years I can keep doing this at this pace, or I probably need to move into another role or something. Or retire, which is what I really want to do. And I just sit home, read comics, go for long walks, watch TV. Enjoy the outside, do a lot of hiking and all kinds of outdoor activities that don't cost a lot of money. And play with Harley. She's looking at the neighbor dog. She stands on this. We have like this bench built on the Trex deck, and it's a Trex bench. And she stands on it and looks over the neighbor's fence. And there's, I think they're called Burmese dogs. It's big. It has a bark that goes woo. but it's she doesn't. I don't know if she can hear anymore. But she spins them up, and she I don't think she knows she does. But she's such a good girl. I love my dog. But I'm gonna jump to some questions and then try to knock out 2 weeks because I just keep falling farther and farther behind. So let's go to the Twitters and we will go to bookmarks and I'll try to scroll down to some of my questions since I covered Batman stories, Knight's End, Night Quest, all No Man's Land, Catalyst. Oh, forget what that one was called. Cataclysm. I loved the Batman arcs that would cross multiple. But he asked about Batman. I answered that last time. This time he asks. Where did I go? I lost my place. He asked Spidey stories. I'm not an expert Spider-Man fan. Although I getting close to having a full run like from the 50s on of Amazing Spider-Man and some of the follow-on volumes. So I'll talk about some of the volumes that I enjoyed the J.M. DeMatteis Spider-Man with the Kraven. I think it's Kraven's Last Hunt. That's a really good story arc. I enjoyed the one where they wiped out Spider-Man's memory and he forgot about Mary Jane. I was probably the only one on the planet that enjoyed that. I thought it was interesting. And it kind of goes along with the Spidey movie kind of thing. You know, the power of Doctor Strange and how he can do things. I really, and I'm in the midst of completing this run, but I mean I've completed it physically, but I'm completing rereading it. I am a real big fan of the Amazing Spider-Man John Byrne run by Howard Mackie and the Howard Mackie spectacular Spider-Man series that went along with it. They often crossed over, like, so if you wanted to continue a story, you had to go on, but it had to do with Mary Jane buying this really big high-rise condominium apartment, like way up there, and can afford it because of her modeling career. Peter's doing fairly well too to contribute because he's got two jobs, one at like I can't remember the lab LabCorp or something like that, where he's a researcher. But they really don't let him do anything. Like they don't show it in the comic. They show him like early on in Amazing, and then they kind of like mention it in the background, like he's gonna get fired because he's always missing, and then he's also working a double chime job because he's still working for the Bugle. Because the way this arc sort of opens up is he's promised Mary Jane to not be Spider-Man anymore, and it's sort of working out, and he's working the two jobs, And there's another Spider-Man. There's somebody posing as Spider-Man, and you don't know who it is initially. And it's kind of cool because he's like, I can retire, and somebody took the mantle. But then that Spider-Man becomes endangered, and he feels like he has to come back in. And then he finds out that that Spider-Man is a 15-year-old girl named Maddie, who's the niece of J. Jonah Jameson. And she has her own book by John Byrne called Spider-Woman, drawn by Bart Sears. And the artists on these, Howard Mackey or John Byrne, Bart Sears, and JRJR, John, and I love JRJR, and he's drawing spectacular Spider-Man. But you got those incredible artists during this time period. It's just like a fun, and you get like engrossed because there's a stalker trying to kill Mary Jane, and later on the plane blows up, and you think she's dead, and Maddie like tries to come on, sympathetically, but then kisses Peter, and it's just like so awkward. And Dr. Octopus creates another Spider-Woman that starts sapping all the other Spider-Woman's powers, like Maddie and Julia Carpenter and Jessica Drew, and then goes after Peter. So there's a lot going on. There's also Sandman, is forms the new Sinister Six without Doc Ock, and they're out to kill Doc Ock. And Venom gets involved, and at this time Peter thinks that Venom is trying to kill Mary Jane. He thinks that Eddie Brock is the stalker of Mary Jane. So it gets really crazy, and this story arc is just so much fun. It's an absolute riot, and still lots of threads in the story going on that will interest you, and it's so fun. Burns art, it looks a little different than what you're used to, like in Fantastic Four or X-Men, but it's still really good. And sometimes he's inked by others where his art stands out better than when I guess he inks himself. But it's really a really good. And then JRJR Spider-Man, Spectacular, is probably his best, I think, personally. He wasn't quite as abstract as he is now, but he had that, like, he's got a really good, even now, has a Kirby panel layout dynamic, and that's what I like about it. It's not real like refined now. It's getting looser with him as age, but just the layouts are just incredible. And I really enjoy it, but I'm a huge Kirby fan. And he's got like, it's like a cross between Kirby and Frank Miller. And that's why I love JRJR, at least in my opinion. Other people say, you're fucked up, Mike. You don't know what you're talking about. But I really enjoy it. And then the other Spider-Man that really drew me in, like what drew me into Spider-Man to begin with, is I didn't get in like with the Gwen Stacy stuff until way later. Like I bought that stuff later, and I just recently even bought the first appearance of Mary Jane. So I wasn't like reading a lot of it, but when I really captivated me was in the late 80s and early 90s when David Michelinie started writing Amazing Spider-Man. It was incredible. His storylines, and then you had Todd McFarlane, and you had like Eric Larson following Todd McFarlane, all my favorite artists. And then the story beats, like it was bi-weekly when it was McFarlane, so it was like you'd get one every other week, and it was just like you get engrossed in the story and the artwork. It was just incredible. And then Eric came over and he kicked ass, and then Mark Bagley came later on. I just love Spider-Man at that time period. And then Spider-Man, the Todd McFarlane issues, I really love. More for art, like when he was writing and doing the story, it was really dark. But I just love the art so much. And so that I love from Spider-Man. There's a lot to love. So there, I mean, you're talking about a decade of Spider-Man that I just loved. The story arcs I don't remember, but I just know all of the stories that involve those artists and how they followed each other. And I followed those artists to Image Comics. And then, like, I enjoyed the comic book web of Spider-Man. Like, I started that with number one and pretty much bought it. And I'm like one of those weirdos who discovered the Clone Saga way late. Way late. And I loved it. It was. I read it in Omnibus, and I became a big Ben Reilly fan. And I became really engrossed in that story. So, yeah, I. It's hard to make recommendations to you, Dallo, because I don't like I don't know you and I don't know what your taste is. I know you like Valiant. So I could say, oh, read this Valiant, and you tend to like the older stuff and to be tightly, in continuity, but I've enjoyed Valiant continuously. Like I've never left and I never will leave. But as long as they keep putting them out, I'm gonna be there. But I hope that answers your question about Spider-Man. But yeah, there's some really good Spider-Man, and that Spider-Man that I was talking about, Amazing Spider-Man, it was Volume 2. It started with number one with the John Byrne stuff. But that Michelinie stuff is incredible. Anything Michelinie touches is pretty damn amazing, whether it be Unknown Soldier, Iron Man, Spider-Man, anything that guy does is just, he's like one of those writers that's just really good. So I'll save your next question for l next time because you asked DD's coming up and I got a lot to talk about there. So that he said that should keep me busy and it will. And then Glenn Clark, he asks, what series do you have the most issues of? That one's tough, because it's not easy to, without writing unique queries, to find out what I have the most of. But Daredevil has got to be up there because there's been multiple volumes and multiple series, and it's pretty much a monthly book. There's been times when it hasn't been published. But I own every single volume and everything Daredevil. There might be some mini series like a prestige book that's Daredevil something or another, Black Widow that I don't own, but every Daredevil volume proper I own. So Daredevil would have to be there, and then also Batman, whether it be Detective or Batman, depending on which one put it out more. Because I've been getting that continuously since 1973. So, and that includes every volume of Batman. So that would be up there. And I am growing my archive, so it could be a lot other stuff like Justice League. I have every volume of that. Europe, Task Force, Justice League of America, Justice League. The only ones I'm missing are like Justice League number one, Brave and the Bold, whatever they premiered in, and like 15 early issues early on. But I have like number three and number seven, and sporadically. But Justice League's got to be up there too because it puts out a lot of books. I have everything Defenders, but they're never always monthly, so I wouldn't say that would be up there. But Superman and Action Comics have got to be up there because that's also going back to 1973 continuously, not missing an issue. And I have a lot prior to 1973, but I'm just talking about continuous. So, yeah, and Superman, I probably can go back to like 1960s where it's almost continuous, but Action Comics almost the same. Yeah, I have quite the collection, but those are some of the ones that I'd mention, because Action Comics is long running, and Detective Comics is long running, and Batman is long running, and Daredevil's long running. And Daredevil's one of the Marvels that I never like. At Black Panther's another one. The only Black Panther that I'm potentially missing is a few, like 5 issues of Jungle Action. Everything else I have, like Black Panther proper. I even have the first appearance of Black Panther in Fantastic Four. So that was a good question. I hope that answers your question. And I'll remove that from my, so I don't accidentally answer it again. I probably have a different answer. I'm going to do one more question. This is Chris Pfeiffer. He says, how do you handle all of your Kickstarter stretch goal items? He says, I love the prints, but find myself a huge pile of other stuff I'm not sure what to do with. This is a good question. And to tell you the truth, I really don't care about the extras. What I end up doing is sometimes there's a lot of extras, is I put most of the extras. I will use the bookmarks for actual books. I'll use them. Some of the stickers, like I will put on my drawer boxes just to liven them up a little bit. I like the metal cards, but what I end up doing with those is putting those with the comic book in the back of the backing board, and some of the extras I'll put in the back of the backing board of the actual Kickstarter comic and then file it away. So if it's not like intrusive to do that, I will do that. So a lot of my extras go in with the comic book in a Mylar after I read it, or even before I read it. And sometimes I just get a mass do them and put them in a bag, depending on what they are. So I don't think I helped you at all, but I might have helped you say just put it with the comic book. So I hope that answers your question. I'll do one more. And this one's tough, because I'm starting to forget how I met everybody. But Kirk Spencer asks, who's the co-host of DC Everything Else with me. He asks, how did you meet your podcast co-hosts? Okay, I'm gonna go back to the beginning. Most of it was through forums. In Comic Geek Speak forums, I've been podcasting since 2006, and my first podcast I did was Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise, and it spawned after Comic Book Noise by Derek Coward, and he actually encouraged me to do a podcast, and I was doing that, pretty regularly, and I didn't have a co-host, but I eventually brought in my wife in later issues, and she co-hosted with me for like 3 episodes. Well, I met my wife in high school, so that was my first co-host. And then I met Timmy Thume and Derek Coward through the forums as well, and I would post on the Comic Geeks forums, and we did some early podcasts together. Timmy Thume would do a podcast called Thume, and Derek did Comic Book Noise, which kind of inspired me to do my own podcast. And we did a couple together, and I met Timmy through the forum, and I actually met him at San Diego Comic-Con for the first time, which was kind of nice. So I've actually met Timmy Thume in person. I've met Derek Coward in person at HeroesCon 2 years in a row. 1 year didn't get to spend too much time with him because he was having like health issues and he was having to go back to the apartment. The other time we did a lot more, but we had like meals together and got to talk, which was great. And the second time we did a lot more because we went to the hotel and met up with one of his podcast buddies and got to talk a lot longer. And that was at Heroes Con. So that's going way back. And then my first co-host was Heath Holland for Geek Brunch. So he was the first host. And that lasted. Geek Brunch is still going on, but it's gone through a couple of hosts. And I'll get to that. I'm trying to do it in chronological order. Met Heath Holland through the forums on Comic Geek Speak as well, which later became Forum for Geeks, but it was the Comic Geek Speak thread. And I don't even think he liked me initially, to be honest. But I liked him. He had this really sharp personality, very extrovert, a little different than me. And I asked him to co-host with me, and that lasted a long time. Well, not it lasted almost 100 episodes, I think. And then he had some issues, personal issues, and needed to step away from podcasting, and then started doing his own thing, and now he does Serial at Midnight. But he inspired me to do podcasting too, to keep going and to do this collaborative co-host thing. And eventually, when he left, I wasn't sure I was going to continue the show because Geek Brunch was us, and then we had this thing called Brunch Buddies, which I met a lot of people. Eric Martin being one, because when Peter Rios told Derek Coward he didn't want to do DC Noise anymore, Eric said, "I want to step in." And I knew Eric from being a brunch buddy on Geek Brunch, and actually met him in person at Heroes Con, which was roughly 2006, which was a con I used to go to every year. And except for when COVID hit, so I haven't been there the last 3 years. I'm not going this year, but I will try to return next year, just because I'm a little cautious, more cautious than most. Like, I'm still wearing a mask. Work finally relieved the mask rules, but I'm still doing it because I just want to be. I'm not the healthiest person, and I want to be a little more cautious and wait till I feel comfortable on my terms. Plus, to tell you the truth, since I started wearing a mask, I haven't been sick. And I usually get sick for weeks at a time. And I haven't been sick for two, maybe 3 years. So, with the flu shots and the COVID, that could be helping. But, I associated some of that to being wearing a mask and just not touch, getting germs from surfaces and then touching my face. Well, the mask prevents that. So I met Bill, him, and then started DC Noise. Okay, and that'll lead into. But during the time that Heath left, there was another fella, which he became my best friend in the entire world, Bill Bomer. He was communicating via the forums, and he became a brunch buddy. And when Heath left, him and Micah, who I also met through the forums, I can't remember their forum. Bill was DBM, and I think Micah was at Do What, and I think I was Comic M, or I can't remember what I was, but I met them, and they became really good friends, and I still see Micah and his wife Claire when we go to Heroes Con. He took a trip to Japan in college and then didn't come back to the brunch. But it used to be me, Bill Bomer, and Micah. And we still meet up at Heroes Con, which is nice. We eat out a lot and meet up. And I enjoy that very, very much. But Bill Brother is like a he Bill Bomer, Bill Brother. He is like a brother to me. Like we are the like I don't know. I think he knows me more than anybody, you know. So that's how I met Bill, and I've gone to Heroes Con and met up with him several times, shared rooms with him. We usually get a room with a living room and a bedroom, and he gets the living room and a fold-out bed, and he stays with me and Barb. And Geek Brunch led to Geek Brunch Retrocast, and I met Chris Ivey talking, you know, on Twitters and the forums. And I recorded with Chris Ivey. I met him. I got to share more time with Chris Ivey, like at a personal level, because he actually came and stayed with us at our house. Luke Foster did too, but he's never been a co-host with me. We recorded together on Geek Brunch, but yeah, he's come and shared time with me. Just like Chris Ivey and his wife. So, you know, we spent a week together here, and he actually went to Heroes Con and Baltimore Con. I can't remember which cons, because Heroes Con and Baltimore are so similar. But did see Chris there, and Bill was almost every year at Heroes Con. Eric Martin, who became my co-host with DC Noise, I met him through Geek Brunch, and just like I said, he was a brunch buddy, and then we became co-hosts. And then Eric Martin passed. He died of a heart attack, and I didn't believe it because this somebody contacted me, his brother, and he said he found out my information, and he wanted me to know that Eric was dead, and I didn't believe him because I didn't know Eric could send out tweets in advance, and his tweets were still coming out. So I'm like, "You're crazy. Eric's not dead," and I didn't believe him. And it turned out he had a heart attack and died. And I've been real close with Eric's ex-wife and his daughter, and I'm still friends with them and his niece. So I still stay in touch with his family, even his mom, at some point. I was friends with her on Facebook, but I've disconnected with her. But yeah, it's I loved Eric. Like he was an amazing individual, and I still miss him a lot. I think about him a lot, and he died very young in his 30s, man. It just so fucking insane. And when he died, I was gonna stop doing DC Noise. I was like, it's just not, it can't be. And then I met Keith Knudsen, who reminded me a little bit of Eric, and I just clicked well with him. Like it was incredible. And we did the show alone together. You know, did the show. And it seemed to flow well. And then we met Daryl. And I remember Daryl was the fuck it guy from Vince and David's bullpen bulletins days on the forum. And I didn't know Daryl at the time, but I went to the Comic Geek Speak Super Show, and I met Daryl, and he had been on DC Noise like an episode or two. And then me and Keith invited him to become podcast partners. And when that happened, DC Noise became an entity that I can't even describe. It became its own entity. And to this day, I think DC Noise was the most popular podcast I ever did. I'd have people come up to me and just introduce themselves, and like they knew us through there. And it wasn't a show about comics, it really wasn't. And it was a show about three buddies on the porch drinking beer and laughing. And it was something special. And I don't know if that mat like we sometimes get together, but it's like the magic, the clicking and the wit, and it's not the same as it once was. Like I would say DC Noise was magical. And we got like this fan following, like it was nobody's business. There was a biker scout that came up to a, we had this thing where Keith used to be a cook at one time, and he was talking about ramps. He made a song called Ramps. That's like an onion thing, ramps. And a biker scout came up to me at a con, and he's got that speaker and the head and all that stuff, and I was like, why is this biker scout coming up to me? And he says over the speaker on his headset, biker scout from Star Wars, he goes, ramps. And I'm like, holy shit. Like a biker scout knows DC Noise. Like, and we it there were people that left DC Noise because what it became. Don't get me wrong, DC Noise was a hardcore DC podcast when me and Keith and Eric were doing it, and then it became its own entity. And Daryl and we laughed so hard. We met artists. We talked to artists live on the show, and it wasn't about art. It was about why are you calling my mom a whore kind of thing. It was like, and then it would just go off. It's like it was insanity, and that's how I met Keith and Daryl. Daryl was Super Show, and Keith, I think, was the first time I met him was at Super Show, and I remember he packed jeans. He never wore jeans, but this time he like packed like some jean Levi's instead of his normal Docker pants, and they were so tight as fuck. He asked me to carry his apartment key, his hotel key, and it was a flat fucking key, the one that you just scan. It was such a great time, and I remember going to Christina, because Christina from DCBS was at Super Show, and we went there, and we had this question going on DC Noise, because I was saying, Keith, nobody orders a can of farts from the back of previews like he did. And we had this ongoing argument, and we went up to Christina DCBS, and we said, can you look into this, Christ? And she did. She actually got back to us, and she found out that nobody else in all of her orders ordered the can of farts except for Keith. And he loved that can of farts. He opened that box up at at one of the conventions that we were at, where we shared a room. I think it was Super Show. And he loved that can of farts, man. He ordered from the back of Previews magazine. And so there's Chris, and then I met Rob through also social media, and found. Actually, Rob was recording with Chris Ivey, another podcast, and when they ended, Rob, I believe he might have come over sooner, but he came over to DC Retrocast, and me and Rob click have a lot of same dislike, likes and dislikes and all kinds of stuff. We have different movies that we like, though. Rob is amazing, and his family's amazing, and Ivy's family's amazing, and Daryl's all. I love him like a brother. He still Daryl talks more to my wife now than he does me, because they talk about TV shows. They watch a lot of the same TV shows, and they just call each other and talk about the TV shows. And often he's on speaker, and I'll shout out my 2 cents every now and then, but yeah, it's pretty damn incredible. Rob and Chris, I think we're gonna record this weekend. And later, the last batch, I was looking to do a podcast, and we don't record as much as I'd like, and it's because of my exhaustion, to tell you the truth. But I met Kirk. Through social media, Twitters, and I really loved his passion for war comics. And I was like, man, I want to do this podcast about war comics and or everything else that's not superheroes. And I came up with this idea, and I was like, man, if I could get Kirk and this guy named Ross, who were big into war comics, but Ross was kind of on the shy end and he didn't want to, come up on the social media. And I taught Kirk how to download the apps that he needed and what he needed so he can actually record and be part of the show. And then he knew Joe Crawford, and I had already been talking to Joe. Joe's an incredible. These two individuals, you'll notice that the individuals that I choose for all my podcasts, I kind of see that their love for comics is great. Like, they have this passion that I have for comics, and they don't seem like they have negative bones in them. Like, they don't focus on the negative. And that's how I've chosen every co-host that I've had, because I like to focus on the positive, whether even a comic book's bad or not. And I'm gonna be out of order because I'm forgetting a lot of other podcasts. But so there's DC Everything Else, and then when Keith, me, and Daryl sort of broke up, I didn't know what I was gonna do with DC Noise. So I decided to do DC Spotlight, and that's where I met Kyle. I met him online. He was very conversive with me online, and I liked where he was coming from, and he's such a great person. Like, Kyle has got such a great heart. Like, you could tell, like, I wanted to meet him in Chicago at C2E2 so bad, but it didn't work out, but he's an amazing individual. And our we enjoy talking to one another. Every other week, we try to do DC Spotlight. So there's DC Spotlight. And in between there, where I got to meet a lot of people that I currently call friends and brothers and Nerdy Legion and stuff, is Daryl formed a podcast called The Valiant Podcast, and this was also like at the DC Noise level. It became really popular. I met an incredible amount of people, an incredible amount of generous people, some people that helped me figure out like how to get these last issues of the Acclaim series, how to get these incredibly hard issues to find. Invited me to, like, a farm that the Mile High Comics Chuck Rosansky owns because he's the son-in-law. I'm Justin is his name. I met so many people through the Valiant Podcast, and that was a podcast with me, Daryl, and Chris Campbell. And Chris Campbell had been on DC Noise before. Chris is an amazing individual. Oh, he's a talented artist too, because he was helping me do my own comic book. And I love Campbell and his family. Like, he invited me one year to, it was Baltimore Con, and his house is near Baltimore Con. So it's like you fly in on a Thursday, and then you go to Campbell Con, which you call Campbell Con, and it was amazing. We'd go to in his basement, and he'd have food and beverages, and we just like talk geek stuff, like pre-con, and it was fucking amazing. And we formed this Valiant podcast because we had this passion for Valiant comics. I think that's how Dallo got to know me, because of his Valiant love and the Valiant podcast. Like, I got to know the Nerdy Legion guys from that. There's just been that podcast was a lot of fun, and I liked how it had the dynamic of DC Noise, because it. The dynamic between me, Campbell, was very humorous, and Daryl. So that was a podcast that was really cool, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And then through DC Collector Spotlight, I met a lot of cool individuals that I actually got to do. And that's a podcast that was amazing. I was getting great downloads with that one. I just don't have the time to schedule it, and there's so many things I want to do, but I can't do all the podcasts I've ever wanted to do. But the Valiant podcast was there. I feel like I even made an appearance on Bullpen Bulletins, and I got to it was me, Derek, Coward, and Vince, and David, A. Price from 11 O'Clock Comics. We were talking about I believe it was a Mike Straczynski Amazing Spider-Man, and I had a blast talking with him. And I don't like know those guys very well. Like I've seen them at conventions, but they're in their own clique, and it's like I would be like an outsider talking to them. But I do talk to Vince more on Twitter than any of them, and I click with him. Like, well, he clicks with my likes. Like. He comes from this place that I could just listen to for a long time, you know. I just like where he where he is with comics, and he's an art person himself, and I feel like I'm gonna miss somebody, and I hate myself for it. But I think I took the journey with you. That was a good question, and I hope I answered it to your I actually answered it pretty in depth, and I could talk about this forever. I think there's some podcasts that I've even forgot, like that I did. But I don't know if any of you heard of Tom Beland's True Story, Swear to God, but that was one of my best experiences, is when me, Derek, and Timmy Thum, we did a podcast, and Timmy Thum picked the books, and he's like, one of the books was True Story, Swear to God. And we absolutely loved it. And Tom Beland heard the episode, and he came on and talked to us about it. And it was an incredible experience for me. So much that when I went to San Diego Comic-Con, I said, yeah, Mike Myers from. We did that podcast with you. He gave me a page. Like, he just took it out of the portfolio and gave me a page of True Story, Swear to God. And it was amazing. I was an amazing experience. So I've had, like, so many, like, cool experiences and so many cool people that I've met over the years through podcasting and social media. A lot of times, social media gets me really depressed. But at the same time, the friends that I've made through social media has changed my life. So I can't ever go away from it. And yeah, it's an incredible journey. And the convention experience, like Heroes Con, changed my life. It really did, because it became something more than comics. It became a location, and that's the I actually got to meet Kirk at a Heroes Con, and we shared bread. We ate at a burger joint and had malts and shakes and stuff like that. And Heroes Con has become so much more than just a comic book convention. It's become a place to meet family, and it's become a place that I'd rather spend time away from the convention with friends than actually on the con floor. It's become something like that. Like the best times are after night, the nights at bars or restaurants, or at back at the motel, the hotel, talking to people at the big table that we usually get. And it's just been it's been an incredible journey, and I miss the convention experience. Never have, San Diego Comic-Con used to stress me out because I wanted to like schedule stuff and be at this panel, be at this panel. The lines were fucking crazy, and when it became more like not caring about that, and when I stopped getting commissions, my stress level like went away, and it became more like I just want to hang out with friends. Like that's what I want to do. And on top of that, shop for comics and talk to creators and stuff, but that's like secondary to me. So I'm gonna pause here, and do some calculations and maybe try to knock out 2 weeks, and I think I can do it before I fall asleep. So I'll be right back, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, let's do this. Okay, I got the totals all ready to go. We're going to go to January 3rd through January 9th. And we're going to talk about things I watched first. There were five out of fives. Cobra Kai season 4 on Netflix. Amazing. I've loved this show since I started watching it. Incredible. And Star Wars Rebels season 2. Star Wars Rebels. I still have to do season 3, but it's been amazing. The whole Star Wars animated series has been phenomenal. And I enjoy it very, very much. So we had a total of 30 comics read that week. 12 Marvel, 5 Image, 1 DC, 2 Boom, 3 AWA, 1 AGH. I don't know what that stands for, but I've had books from them in the past. 2 Aftershock and 3 Action Lab. Everything was 4 out of 5s or 5 out of 5s. So we'll start with the bottom, King Spawn, 4 and 5. This is still my least favorite Spawn book right now. But this is Spawn defeats Kincaid, who's the ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Got that David Lee Roth song in my head. It's been coming up lately. I can't remember. It's been on something on TV. It came on, and then I heard it on Classic Rewind just recently. But Kincaid, but turns over the boy to Gia's daughter. There's a boy that actually crowned him King Spawn and turned that little boy over to Gia's daughter, which is Earth's daughter. And then we have Justice League number 62. This is Hippolyta and Flash go to Naomi's world after Flash realizes he might have screwed things up, sending the JLA there. Brutus is out. Flash is taking them out when Zimbardo shows up. The JL Dark is in the library looking for what book Merlin took. Looks like Merlin is heading towards the ruins of Atlantis. That's the Brian Michael Bendis Justice League. Really good art. So-so story. Bendis is clicking. Like he has ideas and stuff that clicks, but he tends to meander. He really does. Except for his Wonder Comics and his, line that he did Naomi and stuff like that. He seems to like to want to do more. And do better than what he did with Superman and Justice League. But they're still entertaining. Like they're still good. They're 4 out of 5, so above average, but not the best Justice League, but still quite enjoyable. I really like it. That's what a 4 is. We got Undying Queen. This is AGH. This is a queen dies and the king sacrifices her servants. Later in life, when the priest asks the king to sacrifice his daughter, he is killed, but the spell turns her into a vampire. So that's from AGH. The art is beautiful. AGH does a really good job. They just come out very infrequently. It's one of those publishers that you never know when you're going to get the next one. Out number one, this is AWA toward the end of the World War II. There are members of a concentration camp looking to escape and rise up against their captors, and some of them may be supernatural vampires. We then got from Marvel Comics Venom number 2 and 3. This is the latest incarnation, the current volume. Eddie Brock is dead, and Dylan had to take the mantle unwillingly as he is on the run from the Life Foundation, along with the Venom Cat. Archer, who was told to trust, betrays him and turns Dylan over. Archer is a female that Eddie told him he could trust, but it turns out she was in the know and not a good person. We got Twin Mermaids number one. This is a AGH. This is two mermaid sisters. One is a mischievous one, and one's very disciplined. look to use Neptune's staff to turn them human so they can go up on land for a short stint. So you got two sisters, one's a troublemaker and the other one's more real grounded character. Got Peter Parker Spider-Man teams up with Thor and other characters. This was like a team up, almost a team up book by JRJR, well, with Howard Mackey. I talked a lot about this before. Really good series, and I called it Spectacular Spider-Man before. It's really Peter Parker Spider-Man, and I keep forgetting that. I'm correcting myself now. So back, to Dallow's question, the Spider-Man stories, it was Peter Parker Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man 1 through 4. This is the series that goes along with it by John Byrne. We just beat this one to death, but this is Peter stops being Spider-Man and moves in with MJ and Aunt May because she's a famous model. He gets a good job with Tri-Corps. That's the name of the corporation that I was telling you about. Another Spider-Man is fighting Scorpion and other villains, and Peter has to help when a new villain attacks the lab. He finds out the female is Spider-Man named Maddie. He takes the role back, even though he promised MJ. It looks like he might be fired from his job. He has a run-in with the Trapster and Sandman and saves the senator. And that senator is not a good person. That's part of the plot that I did not mention. Dr. Octopus is protecting the senator, and the Sinister Six is trying to kill the senator. So that's another part of the plot. We got Spawn 324, Jim Downing, who, man, I love the Jim Downing Spawn. A lot of people didn't like the Jim Downing Spawn, but I thought Todd McFarlane was scripting at the best when it was Jim Downing, like when he was actually writing the script and dialogue. I thought it was fantastic, highly religious. The themes were very complicated. I really liked it, but now Jim Downing's back trying to convince Mark, he used to work for Jim at they like had a religious organization where, he was a healer that was going to save the world. And Mark was running the business for him, and now he's a medieval Spawn, and he thinks his motivations will help him win the war between heaven and hell. She spawns re rescuing kids in South America. We got Heathens 1 and 2. This is from Aftershock. A group of heathens have to stop Jack the Ripper. The group consists of Madame Shill, Sophia Bly Eustine, Billy the Kid, Lucky Luciano, and Bumpy Johnson, led by Joseph Stalin. The real life characters formed a group to take down Jack the Ripper. It was amazing. It was great. Got Gunslinger Spawn 2 and 3. He takes on angels and defeats them. He has to kill the boy's father, and the boy is reluctant to join Spawn, Gunslinger Spawn. He is shocked to find that people shit in the house. Why did I take that as a note? And not an outhouse. That's one of the funny things about being a cowboy. Yeah, he has the remark to the boys like, "Why would you shit in your own house instead of an outhouse and keep the shit away from the house?" Oh, that's funny. But we got Machine Man number 6 and 7. This is my second read through it. Actually, no, it's not. I bought these a long time ago, but I was reading them digitally because I read a Back Issue Magazine Machine Man article and I wanted to read it all. And these are the Kirby issues. The government puts Machine Man on trial for whether he should be destroyed or not. He entrusted to Dr. Spaulding when they are attacked by a robot. Machine Man destroys the said robot. And that night, the doctor is captured, and Machine Man goes to the rescue. We got the 5 out of 5s now. Digger 1 through 3. This is from Action Lab. I believe I have number 4, which is good because I think Action Lab is going under because they're getting sued by how bad they were treating creators. And Digger was a really good gem at the end of their run. So, looking forward to that. A gravedigger loses his partner because he wants to retire. They were responsible for killing supernatural beings, and he can't take it anymore. The guy that retires, he rec the guy that doesn't retire recruits a young drunk woman who is losing her home. She wants to quit initially, but this is turning out to be the cure for her alcoholism. They take on a vampire and a yeti. Meanwhile, an evil mogul is trying to build a casino over the graveyard, which is going to cause all hell to break loose in the city. Really fun series. Then we have Knighted 1 and 2 from AWA. A computer clerk working for the police gets rejected by his girlfriend when he proposes and gets a ring stolen by these bald thugs that have technology grafted onto them. He accidentally kills the knight and now unwillingly has to become the knight. Hurwitz says he always wanted to do a cross between Batman and Spider-Man, and that's what this is. Regarding the matter of Oswald's body, number 1 and 2, a bunch of misfits are gathered to go after Oswald, the guy who killed JFK, or set up so an imposter takes over for him and they bury a body that is not Oswald. It's a really incredibly well-written story. I think Chris Cantwell wrote it. Might be mistaken on that. So let's go to January 11th through January 16th. We had some watching there. We had a movie called Daughter of the Wolf. That was a 3 out of 5. That's about a woman who... There's an older man played by Richard Dreyfuss that wants this woman to pay back this debt, but steals her money because she is going to pay back this debt and has no intention of returning the child that he kidnapped from her, her son. And now she's seeking revenge. This is with that woman that was in Boba Fett, one of his allies that got canceled recently because of her anti-vax or whatever she was doing. I can't remember. The 4 out of 5s were The Canyon. That's a one of those horror stories about getting stuck in the Grand Canyon. Their guide gets bit by a rattlesnake, and they have to try to find their ways out. Really entertaining story. I think I watched that on Netflix. Army of One. That was a movie about a veteran woman that goes with her police husband for a camping kind of exercise because he's been stressed and he was shot during a drug bust or something like that. And they go out and they meet a sort of a gang that rules a town. Well, actually a woman and her sons. They're not really her sons, but she calls them son. And they end up killing her husband, and then it's a revenge story. That's Army of One. Peacemaker, that's from the HBO series. It's really good. Really enjoyed that. And then the 5 out of 5 was Night Hunter. This was like a movie like Seven. So if you like movie like Seven, this is probably the movie you need to do. And if I remember correctly, Daughter of the Wolf, The Canyon, Army of One, Night Hunter, they were all on Amazon Prime, not Netflix. So that week I read a pathetic, measly total of 18 comics. This has been like the norm. It's been not good. It's like a Saturday morning thing. I sit down and try to read as many comics, and then things happen and I don't get much read, and I don't read during the week. And I've been too exhausted because usually sometimes I would read at night on the iPad, and I haven't been able to do that because I'm too exhausted. So, yeah, I'm getting older and I just can't take these long hours. But there's 8 Marvel and 10 DC. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s. Demon Days, Rising Storm. The Fable continues with the story about demons and the helmet. The main character wears. Also, she has a run-in with the version of Thor and Storm. This is the Peach Momoko series. This is one that I thought was gonna blow up because Peach Momoko was hotter than hell. And this is the first time she's done interiors, and she's done like four volumes of this. And in truth, it's a fun fable to read, but it's not something that I like need to read. I enjoy it. It's a 3 out of 5, but if I wasn't a completist, I would probably stop getting this, but I'm gonna finish it, finish the run. This is when I really thought I was gonna be a huge spec book, and I should get it because of her interiors and she's hot. And in terms of art, she's a hot artist. And not I don't want to say she's just like a guy could be a hot artist. I don't mean hot like hot, but I don't even know what she looks like. But she's an artist that her covers go for a lot. So. The Thing number 1 and 2, this is a 3 out of 5. I really didn't like this. The words just don't click with me, and it's such a weird story. The Thing comes back from a trip to find a strange man with Alicia. He then gets Alicia to turn on him, and the Thing gets arrested. Mr. Fantastic gets him out of jail while they are in Russia, but he gets caught up with this boy and a woman going after a strange person that had his heart pulled out by a strange creature, and they fight. A very strange story, and surprised it was greenlit to begin with. So that was kind of harsh words, and I shouldn't have said that, but I kind of felt that. But I still gave it a 3 out of 5. There were things there to like. It was just more so the words. The art wasn't my favorite, but it was very good storytelling in terms of getting what the story was across. The story was just really bizarre, and the dialogue didn't flow in my brain. So I gave it a 3 out of 5. We then have from DC Comics The Witching Hour number 1, 2, and 3. This is the one I did with Kyle on the DC Spotlight. The witches Mordred, Mildred, and Cynthia compete by telling horror stories. Would have enjoyed looking at the letters pages as fans could vote who was the best storyteller, essentially. So it would have been fun to have voted. The stories were kind of weak, but the banter between the witches was a lot of fun for sure. We got Crime Syndicate 5 and 6. This is a fairly recent series from DC. Luther tells the team called the Justice League, forms a team called the League of Justice, and sends them after Johnny Quick and Atomica, who are in the crime syndicate. Emerald Knight kills Johnny, but Atomica takes out the Giganta character. Ultra Girl attacks Ultraman and looks like she is going to defeat him, but Atomica kills her. She goes like into the ear and just fucks her up. Ultimately, Emerald Knight switches sides, and now the new crime syndicate is formed. The backups include origins of Johnny Quick and Atomica. We then have Captain America, Iron Man number 1 and 2. This is a really good mini series. Didn't expect to like this as much as I am. Tony gets Veronica Eden a job working for SHIELD, and she's later on trial because she was giving secrets to Hydra and imprisoned. Her transport is intercepted and she is freed, and Cap and Iron Man must stop her, but she gets away. Tied into Captain America and the Falcon, it's tied into Captain America and the Falcon. The Paladins, this is a group of younger heroes, say they are going to bring in 51 as he is trying to reactivate the Myrmidon for reasons unknown. It's a weapon of sort of destruction. And Cap and Iron Man do recapture Veronica. They did battle her as she and Doc Ock arms. She had Doc Ock arms and a scorpion tail. We have Green Lantern 161. I gotta go let in Harley because she's yelling at me. She's saying, "Dottie, let me in! Dottie, let me in! The sun's gone, and you gotta let my ass in." So I'm almost done, and then I can take a rest and take a swig of my Dr. Pepper here. Yeah, Green Lantern 161. This is volume two. Volume one is the Golden Age Green Lantern, Alan Scott. But this is Hal Jordan's first ongoing. A powerless Green Lantern and the Omega Men take the headmen and the Citadel take on the headmen and the Citadel. They manage to defeat them, and the Citadel makes an agreement to protect themselves against the Guardians, but turning over the headmen. An old love interest, Doreen, is reignited, but Hal is with Carol, and he's like, "Why is this a relationship? Where's it gonna go?" He doesn't even want it. Very entertaining, reading these old Green Lanterns. I have one long box that's been next to my couch for a long time, and it's filled with like a My Comic Shop order of things that I needed to complete. Runs from to say I have complete runs since 1973, and there were Green Lantern and Flash books in there. The next one is Flash 242. Flash takes on an electric gang, and Iris helps take them out. Meanwhile, the Rogues are assembling for a funeral of one of their members. Flash is losing his memory. Kerry Bates is my man. Like he's one of those writers that I loved. Kerry Bates is the reason that I love the Flash so much, and he became one of my favorite characters was Kerry Bates, back in the well, I'd say Bronze Age is when Kerry Bates came on. That's when I started reading Flash pretty regularly. And then Hal, it's a backup story where Hal takes on the Revengers. We have Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 1. This is the John Byrne stuff. An excellent annual that wraps up the tussle with the Trapster and Wizard, which were hired by the Senator. His name is Senator Ward, by the way. I remembered that because I like this series so much. John Buscema is on art. Not too much Spider-Man I've read with John Buscema, but this was pretty awesome. And it's a modern, John Buscema. It was from 1999, so it's not his older stuff. We have Hawkeye, the 5 out of 5, Kate Bishop. This really clicked with me. I didn't know. It could be that I just watched the Hawkeye TV show on Disney Plus, and it just like felt like it came naturally out of that, but it really was well done, and the story beats are pretty awesome. Kate takes down a gang in Los Angeles before being summoned by her sister to solve a mystery of missing jewelry. During that, a young girl is kidnapped, and Kate and her sister rescue her, only to find out they're being attacked by the resort staff, who appear to be mind controlled. We then have the next 5 out of 5, which was Flintstones from DC Comics 1 through 3. The Flintstones deal with hiring practices, purchasing practices, and religion, all in 3 issues. This is the it's kind of like really cool to see the Flintstones tackle on modern problems in the prehistoric age, and that's what this is. It's very entertaining. That wraps up the those books in January. I should do another week, but I'm too tired, so I'm going to stop and call this one good. And the 5 out of 5, just to summarize, were Kate Bishop, Hawkeye from Marvel Comics, the current one that's being published, Flintstones from DC Comics 1 through 3, and Digger 1 through 3 from Action Lab, and Knighted from AWA 1-2, And regarding the matter of Oswald's body 1 and 2, I want to thank you for listening. Please send me questions at any time. You see, I have fun with them. And you could send them to at Mike Myers Brunch, and you can get a hold of me by tweeting me at Mike Myers Brunch or sending me a direct message. You can also, if you want to send email to Mike at comicbooknoise.com, that's another way to get a hold of me. This podcast is located at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and also on Facebook, you can follow the episode threads there by going Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button, and chime in on there. And we'll be talking soon. I want to thank you, those people who have given me questions, Dallow, Glenn, Kirk. I really appreciate those questions. Oh, Chris was the other one. Thank you for giving me those questions. They were good questions. And I will talk to you again soon, hopefully next week. Well, actually not. I will be traveling. So next week I'm going to have to do another, the week after I'm going to have to do another two-parter, I think, and get another episode out if I want to keep catching up. I don't think ever in history I'll ever be caught up. That's just weekly reads is always lagging because I'm so damn tired. I have fun doing this because it's a diary, but don't get me wrong, I want to read some comics and also watch. I was watching a Megan Fox movie on Hulu, and it was really intriguing, way better than I thought. But anyway, you'll hear about that in a future episode. So we'll talk to you soon, and take care of yourselves. And we'll, if you get to go to Heroes, say hi to all my friends. Bye.